the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about, Susan, is, you know, the shoop in life. You know, I told you I got that $42 hula hoop, and it didn't shoop, and I was upset. That was the fun of having a hula hoop when you were a kid, was making that noise, you know, getting your hips.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, but it's like life. It is our circle of influence, what we choose to put around us, what is inside of our hula hoop. And I'm so glad that you're here to circle around with me on the Edge. Yes, Brains, we are back home on the Edge with April Mahoney and today's beautiful guest, that is Susan Goodson. Susan is an author, and she is also a sales director for Mary Kay. So we're going to talk about beauty, and we're going to talk about bravery, and we're going to talk about boldness, because inside the pages of her book, you see I got my page marked, okay? Let me get this up here, because it's got a little bit of a glare.
Yeah.
And you see it? Wait a minute. I got to get it right. And you see it? The cover's kind of dark.
Yeah.
If you can't see it, Brains, you're going to hear it. Because
amen.
He's got one story to tell, Brains. I mean, absolutely. There is no joke about this. So I need you to sit back and relax and get ready for this podcast, video cast on the Edge with our guest, Susan Goodson. How are you, Susan?
I'm good. I'm good. Okay. I'm learning to navigate a new normal, whatever that means.
Whatever that means. And you know what? We just have to kind of sit in it and resonate.
We want to navigate.
The first thing you want to do is get in the driver's seat and try to move forward. But you got to learn how to work the car first.
Absolutely. And I think it's a time where we need to be patient. Anytime I try to run ahead of the moment, I get lost. I get scared. I need to come back and be here with you, not somewhere else in another dimension thinking of other things. It's about being in the moment. Trusting the moment.
Well, you have traveled to the outer limits. Tell my Brains a little bit about your story.
Oh my gosh. I'm the oldest of five. I was raised in an alcoholic home with a violent alcoholic and a very scared mother. I became the hero of our family. My dad, bless his heart, was violent, and he hit and ripped cupboard doors off of hinges and threw furniture and kicked holes in furniture. And so I learned how to stay invisible until I was needed to protect my siblings. And what happened is I carried a lot of those coping skills and survival skills into my adulthood. And then I ended up marrying a man who had a drinking problem. Had three children who all struggled with addiction. My husband left when the kids were 2, 3, and 7 to be with another woman. Well, he ended up marrying her. And then I married again, and this husband ended up going back out using drugs, trying to manufacture meth in the garage. The kids brought me all the drug paraphernalia. I went to the police, had him arrested, served him with divorce papers in jail. And still trying to deal with children that struggled with the addiction themselves. And I think probably what saved me is that I learned how to redefine what the concept of love was for me. Because I thought that helping them was really helping them, and it wasn't. Buying them, getting them a job, giving them money, getting them an apartment. That was only holding them up from living the consequences of their choices. And it was what I was trying to do was soothe my own mother's heartache. I thought I was trying to soothe theirs, but I recognized that until they got sick and tired of being sick and tired, they would never change. And I had to turn away. I had to let go. Yeah. It was the hardest thing I ever did was to love my children from a healthy point of view.
Girl, I'm telling you, you love them beyond my wildest dreams. Because, see, I would have got my purse and my keys. I would have been out. Okay? The husbands, the fathers, all of that. I want to share one of the pages that I read in your book with our
husband.
Okay? And this is, again, from Susan's book, Letting Go of Shame, A Mother's Journey, Raising Addicted Children. This is on page 82. My son was home with me and wrapped in my warm embrace while I sprinkled tears all over his broad shoulders. We were all so incredibly happy to have Matt back. Katie and Sean delighted in having their big brother home for a while. Our family had such an incredible time catching up on his adventures overseas, how he had made new friends in school, and how the time that he had spent with his father was healing for both of them. My heart was joyful, and I was so content. My boy was safe and sound here on American soil. But during one of our conversations, he accidentally let it slip that he had gotten himself in a bit of trouble. I could tell that he was not planning on telling me, because he looked like he had swallowed a big fat yellow canary. Trouble? What kind of trouble? I asked quickly. He said, it wasn't a big deal. Just stealing a few car stereos with friends. A bit of trouble. I tried to stay calm, though I was seething inside. You call breaking and entering and stealing car stereos on a military base small bit of trouble? Matthew, do I have the word stupid written across my forehead? He had no words and sat there with his head bowed down, staring at the floor. I was so sorry that I had let those harsh words fly from my mouth. I didn't want to badger him or fuel the fire of his shame. I had prayed for words of wisdom, but it was too late, and now I needed to make amends for spraying him with my abrupt judgment. I'm sorry, Matthew, I began. I didn't need to shoot you with my anger and frustration. I'm just surprised by your confession. I thought things were going to go smoothly for you while you were with your dad. What happened? What I want to ask you is what happened to you? Within that short passage, I see you going in all different directions. Joy, jubilation, you're excited, and then you're shocked. And then you're the enabler, and then you're the person that's feeling guilty. You're feeling guilty for his screw up, and then you don't want to talk about it. I mean, you're all over the map there, Susan, and you did this with three children.
Yeah. You know, loving an addict is like living inside of a pinball machine. And all of a sudden, somebody pulls back the lever, and the ball shoots out, and I'm the ball, and I end up bouncing all over the place. I bounce from feeling supportive, feeling content, to being frustrated, to being angry, to being embarrassed, to being shamed, all of that. Because in this process, I had to learn not to own his choice. Matthew's choices were Matthew's choices, not mine. And I didn't, and what happened is I would go to that place as a Mary Kay businesswoman in town with a son and children that struggled with addiction. And I didn't want anybody to know, because somehow that would have meant that I didn't do a good job raising my children. And raising children is hard enough when they don't struggle with disease, with the disease of addiction. Then you throw in that, and I get triggered on what could I have done different? What's wrong with me? What if people find out? What if they know I have an addict son? What if they don't buy for me? What if I end up broke? What, all of that. And so in the beginning, because Matthew was about 14. So that was just the beginning stages of the kids starting to experiment with drugs. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. But I knew that I'm responsible for my own words.
Right.
And when my words are spoken in a way that harms another person's spirit. I don't have to apologize for my feelings behind it, my frustration, my disappointment, but I do want to make amends for how I deliver that message, because that can be harmful. And I don't want to harm him. I want to communicate with him.
Right.
And so as we progressed in our relationship, I learned that I needed a timeout. Even now, sometimes I just have to say, I need a timeout. I don't want to say things I don't want to say. I need to process what's going on with me, and I'll come back and we'll talk.
Right. Realize that, you know, it's going to cause you to go get a drink, okay?
Exactly. Exactly.
Have you ever used drugs or alcohol?
No. I'm addicted to people that have drinking problems.
Right.
I gather people. I get outside of my hula hoop and into theirs.
Right.
Yeah. No, not me.
Yeah. You know, I have a family member passed away now that was a raging alcoholic. And my mother used to say, you know, why is it that alcohol makes you act so ugly? She says, why can't it just make you act sweet and kind and cuddle up in the corner? Now, you have drugs, a combination of drugs and alcohol. So you have emotions that are all over the map. You have people that are stealing because they need money to support their habit. They're lying to you. You don't know if you can trust them. You don't know who's coming in and out of your house, who they're associating with. You don't know who they owe money to that could be a danger to you. You know, it feels like you are more the victim than they are. What did you do? To help you get through these tough times?
Say that again. What did I do?
What did you do to get through these tough times?
I got involved in a 12-step program that helps those who love alcoholics. I learned that I can't label anybody. I can only own the fact that their behavior causes me stress. I learned to ask for help. I learned to quit keeping my secrets. My children are affected. They were affected by the disease of alcoholism. I wouldn't be ashamed if my child had diabetes or cancer. So I had to learn that this wasn't something that they did to me. They weren't doing these behaviors to cause me stress. It had to do with their own sense of self-loathing. So once I figured out how I didn't need to own their choices, it didn't hurt as much. It still hurt me to watch them dig a hole for themselves and go down the rabbit hole. But when God chose me to be their mother, nobody ever promised me that it would be easy. No one ever said that those children belonged to me. They didn't belong to me. They belonged to God. And I was only a part of the journey, and I had to let go, even if it meant that my children would die in the streets.
Wow. That's a heavy load to tow. Now, how is the relationship among the siblings?
Oh, they love and hate each other, but I'll tell you what, if there were ever a problem, they would drop everything to be there for each other. They love each other. Matthew is the oldest, then comes Katie, she's 4 years younger, and then comes Sean, he's 18 months younger. So they, I think Katie drives her brothers crazy, but she's a girl and she's very strong, and but they're family, and they act that way.
Do they all recognize that all of them have an addiction? Do they try to support one another through that, or do they get together and party?
Oh God, no. No, they don't do that. They support each other and they give each other space. You know, my two boys are not completely clean, but they are doing a fantastic job. They're working full time, they're traveling, they pay their bills, they're good citizens, they're in relationships. Who am I to say that they need to choose another way? That's not my job. Katie's been clean for 17 years. She's a traveling hospice nurse and the mother of four, married, and they're amazing people. They are amazing, loving people. They've lived through hell. They figured out how to get out of it. And now they're getting to make choices that work for them. And I remember when my youngest son told me he was growing marijuana. Mm. And I said, oh. And he said, you're not mad at me? And I said, no, I'm not growing marijuana. Right. I don't live here. Right. And he said, you want to see the plants? I'm like, yeah. So I got to learn about growing. And he did it all the right way. He did it in a state that it was legal. He had his certificate. He did it for medicinal purposes. He gave it to the people that used it, where the doctors said, you know, here's your marijuana card for pain. But you know what? That was inside his hula hoop, not mine. Now, if he was living in my house, that would have been a whole different story.
Right.
But he wasn't. Wasn't my hula hoop.
So you've learned to extract yourself from their personal choices and to be able to find a life and a piece of your own.
Absolutely. So now,
you had this husband that was cooking meth.
Yeah.
Doing way too much. Could have blown everybody up and just what he was doing to other people. How'd you get rid of him?
Well, my kids came to me and they brought me drug paraphernalia. And I don't know what drug paraphernalia looks like. There was a broken light bulb and straws and razor blades and tin foil. And I'm like, what is this? And they said, Mom, it's drug stuff. You need to do something about this. You need to do something. Well, of course, being the naive woman that I was, I put all of that in a Mary Kay bag, like I was making a delivery. and I drove around in my pink Cadillac for a week with it in my purse.
Oh my God.
And my girlfriend is like, are you an idiot? If the police stop you, you're going to jail. I'm like, why? I didn't do anything. So I had a girlfriend that said, her husband was an attorney. And she said, if you do not do something with what you know, and the police end up at your house, you'll lose your kids. And then you'll have to fight to get them back because you live in the home where this is happening. So I went to the police with her one afternoon. He was at home and there wasn't a phone. It was after 5 o'clock. I kept saying, oh, this is a sign. I want to go home. She said, no, we're not going home. And we saw three police officers come out of the back of the police department. And we went up and said, can you help us? And they said, what do you need? And I put all the stuff on the back of one of the patrol cars. And they're like, oh my God, where did you get this? I said, my husband. And they said, can we follow you home? And I said, no, he's there. And they said, well, we have too much information now. And so your yes will override his no to search. And so they followed me home. And yeah. They arrested him.
Okay. And was your husband white? Was he white?
But tattooed all over.
But
totally tattooed.
Did they treat him with respect and dignity when they came to arrest him?
Yeah, they were. I didn't stay outside in the garage. I didn't want to watch. The kids ended up on the street, on the curb, screaming at me for turning in their stepdad, who they came to me and asked me to do something. And when I did something, they didn't know what to do with how they felt. So they were yelling at me, so I went inside. To my knowledge, they were very respectful. The only time they probably got a little aggressive was when he got out of hand and told them they didn't know what they were doing, and they politely told him to sit down with his hands handcuffed and be quiet. But overall, if it could be a good experience, if that's what you want to call it, it was.
I'm just saying, you know, this is drug paraphernalia, and I didn't want anything bad to happen to him. But in the signs of the times that we're in, you know, your two white sons, white daughter, white ex-husband can have drug paraphernalia right there, a felony, methamphetamine, and be treated with dignity and respect. And African Americans are treated like dogs. Hung for a small violation of what is perceived as a fake $20 bill, or laying in your bed sleep. You know, what do you say to people out here that are struggling? You know, you've been through all of this. You have been torn inside out with these emotions and these drugs and other situations. Can you provide some words of encouragement for people and what they're going through right now, be it if they have drug addicted children or the police coming to their house or they're an enabler? What could you say to them?
Oh my gosh, April. You know, it's different for me than it is for you. It's different for my children than it is for your children. My heart breaks for people, for all of our people, and for all of our children. I don't know why things happen the way they do, but what I would encourage, you know, and a lot of the people, a lot of our kids, and especially our, you know, the blacks, they're being victimized. And there were times that I felt victimized. I was victimized by a dad who beat me up. I was victimized by a mother who didn't step in and protect me. But I don't want to carry that mindset. I don't. I don't want to continue to be a victim, even though I was one. But in my coaching business, I'm learning that I have to acknowledge what happened, own the feeling behind it, and then continue to move forward. Because I know what it feels like to be victimized. I know what that feels like. It's in my DNA, and I have to be very mindful that I don't create situations or look for situations to reinforce that at one time I was a victim. So I guess what I would want to say to people out there is to stay as close as you can to the God of your understanding. As often as you can, stay inside your own hula hoop. Try not to be, I don't want to say try not to be someone else's savior, but to be involved in a healthy way to share your voice and to speak up.
Right.
It wasn't safe for me to speak up. So I didn't. I quieted my voice. I dimmed my light. I shut down because other people got scared of me. And I'm not doing that anymore. If you're scared of me, then you've got some work to do.
Well, they've got some work to do. A lot of people have a lot of work to do. And again, having that conversation, I like a fresh perspective. I like to feel the feels, you know?
Yeah.
Because we have to feel the fear and yet do it anyway.
You right.
Don't see somebody about to jump in front of a speeding train. You want to pull them back.
Right.
Sometimes people have to learn their own lessons. I've told my children, there's some things in life I can't talk you through.
Exactly. I will share a story with you if we have time.
Absolutely.
Okay, years ago when my dad was drinking, I had a friend of mine that asked me if I loved him. And I said, well, of course I love my dad. I mean, that's the dumbest question I've ever heard. And she said, no, do you really love him? And I said, yes, I really love him. And she said, do you love him enough to give him the dignity to choose the life choices he wants to choose? Mm. And I said, do you mean, do I love him enough to watch him drink himself to death? And she said, yes. And I said, that's a lot of love. Mm. And do you know that when I stopped trying to make him any different than who he was, and I loved him, even if it meant he was going to drink himself to death, my dad was sober 30 days later. And when he died, he was sober for over 35 years.
Wow.
He has a life. Everybody has a life.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's dignity in the choices that they make, even though I look at them and think, you must be out of your mind. And I want to love like that. I want to love hard enough and deep enough so that whatever choice you make, even if it means it's going to break my heart, it belongs to you. And I will love you anyway.
I love you, sister. Oh, because that again, that it's a lot. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing. Because it's a lot to love unconditionally.
And brains, it is.
You know, brains, I tell you, sister working on that because there's some conditions on mine, really conditions. But let's bring a smile to your face and some pretty lipstick. How did you find Mary Kay? Mary Kay was your saving grace. Now, you know, I love that. I've never been a Mary Kay consultant, but let me tell you, her philosophy and her business model was revolutionary for the women of their time. I mean, these women learned how to build a business.
They do.
We're always taught that God came first. Even
absolutely.
And then family, and then your business. She rewarded you with pink Cadillacs and diamonds and rubies and, you know, these big parties. How did you find Mary Kay? How was that your escape?
Well, I was first introduced to Mary Kay when I was 19 years old and I was working in the Orange Julius stand at South Coast Plaza.
Girl, I've not been there, South Coast Plaza and Orange Julius.
Yep. And she approached me and she asked me if I wanted a makeover and I said yes. And then I became a consultant, but I was with my alcoholic at the time. We weren't married. I got married at 21, moved to Montana, was so ill-equipped to do anything. And he was not very supportive because me being independent would have scared him. So I quit. Well, actually, I got kicked out because I didn't do anything for a whole year. And then I copped a victim attitude because why would they kick me out? They don't even know me. I mean, my poor, you know, poor me. And then 4 years later, I met a woman who was in Mary Kay and I told her I had sold it at one time. And what happens to Mary Kay consultants is when someone says, oh, I used to be in Mary Kay, we sort of get a glazed look over our eyes and we're like, oh, you were? Oh,
you're part.
I would love to have you on my team. And so this woman pursued me for 3 months. Every week she called me. I was so angry with her. I said, look, I've already failed once. I have an alcoholic husband. I have an 18-month-old son. I broke. I don't have a car. I have no friends. Get off of me.
Get out of my hula hoop.
And she pursued. And so 3 months later, she came to the house and I wrote a bad check. And I told her that. I said, it's a bad check. She said, okay, we'll hold it. We'll train you. And then she said, you know, do you want to get some inventory? And I'm like, what don't you understand about a bad check for $65? And she said, Susan, you can only do the footwork. God takes care of the results. So I put on my favorite pantsuit because I didn't own a dress. I walked with my son in a stroller to the bank. I don't know how far it was. We lived in Washington State. And I asked if I could apply for a loan. And they're like, do you work? And I went, no. Do you own a home? No. Do you own anything? No. Does your husband work? Yes, he's a career Marine. They're like, oh, God. Well, we don't loan to people like you. And I looked at them and I said, well, if you don't give me the money, somebody else will. Honestly, April, I turned around to see if it was me talking because I'm 24 years old and I'm not brave.
Right, right.
And she said, well, do you own anything? Do you have a pink slip to a jet ski or anything? And I went, oh, yeah, we own our old truck. And so I talked to my husband about it. And surprisingly enough, he said, yeah, you can use the pink slip. So I went to the bank and I showed him the pink slip and she said, well, we'll go before our board and we'll let you know, in a few days, give us a call. And I thought, I'm not going to call them. I'm going to walk into that bank every day and I'm going to look them in the eye because if they're going to tell me no, they're going to tell me to my face, wow, not on a phone.
Right.
No. And after 4 days, she said, yeah, they approved you. So I got a loan for $600. I placed my first order. I paid it off in 3 weeks.
Wow.
She said, would you like more? I said, yes. She said, how much? And I'm like, I don't know. How much can I get? And she said, whatever you want, and we'll bring you the paperwork. You don't need to come walking to the bank anymore.
What?
So I got $2,000 more. And by the end of my first month, I was the queen of wholesale production for the whole entire state of Washington, when only a month prior, I had written a bad check.
Mm-mm. Won't he do it? Won't he do it? God will set you up and set you on a path that you had no idea, you know?
And then 7 years later, when my husband wanted to leave, my attorney said, I suggest that you get a home with another mother and children because I don't think you can do it on your own. And I said, oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. And I have not worked another job in 40 years. I have only done this. So God knew what was coming down the pike for me. And I just had to say yes. But boy, I'll tell you, it was hard for me to take the risk. I was afraid of failure. I'd already done it once. I didn't want to do it again.
And you had so much opposition.
I did.
So you sat down and you wrote a book. So tell us about the book. Writing process.
Well, I met a woman at a networking event, and I asked her if I could give her a makeover. And she said, oh, yeah, sure, that would be fine. But I'm an editor, and I think our paths crossed because there's a book for you to write. And I said, I'm not writing a book. I'm building a Mary Kay empire. And she said, well, just so you know, I'm an editor, and you probably have a book to write.
Wow.
And every time she saw me, she'd look at me and wink. And I'm like, I am not writing a book. I am not. Okay. Get off of me. Just like the Mary Kay person. But see, God brings really strong women into my life because I resist. I'm a strong resister.
That's why you're on the edge, baby. That's right. That's what we do. We resist. We are not going with the status quo. That's not.
No.
No.
So she told me about, so I was sitting at a Mary Kay event, and I texted her and I said, okay, I'll write a book. And she said, well, what are you going to write a book about? And I said, well, it's about a bad word. She goes, what do you mean it's about a bad word? I said, well, I'm going to write a book about poop. And she goes, oh, okay. I I don't know poop. I don't give a poop, up poops creek without a paddle, blah, 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 blah. I was so done with my life and my kids. And she said, oh, that sounds really good. And I said, I'm not going to write a book about that. I mean, come on. I can't write a book about that. And so a few months later, it was Mother's Day, and I was in the shower, and my kids called, and they all lived in Washington State at this time. They had all gone up to live near their dad. And see, their dad abandoned them. And I got to live through all of the horrible teenage years. And then they left and went and lived with him. And I thought it was so unfair. And my daughter called and she said, Mom, it's Mother's Day and we're all here together. Mm. But the only one that was missing was me. Mm. They were there with their stepmom and their dad and their siblings. And I decided then that I was going to write a book about my kids. And so when I called my friend, she said, it's the same book. And I'm like, the same book about poop is about my kids? And she goes, it's everything you lived through,
right,
with those children. It's the, you didn't know what to do. You didn't know how to love. You didn't know how to navigate this. How do you go to the kids' school and visit with the vice principal who says, I think your son was selling marijuana near the food court, and now we need to know what to do about it? And even my son said later on, he's like, Mom, I did just what you did. You know, I even got people to sell for me and gave them a commission. I'm like, that's not what I meant. I didn't start my Mary Kay business to teach you how to get into the drug business.
It was marijuana.
So she helped me write the book, and it took me a couple years. And at one point, it was so painful for me to write it that I told my editor, who then I started working with an editor in Los Angeles, and she said, "I want to know the details." And I said, "I don't want to remember." And she said, "Susan, there's a difference between a good book and a great book. And you can't write this book and not tell the women out there what it felt like." And I said, "You know what it feels like to be the mother of an addict?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "I feel like my heart bleeds out every time I take a breath." And she said, "That's what you need to write." And I said, "Asking me to go back and remember is, I don't know if I can do it." And she said, "Well, you can't just write a book on the surface when it comes to dealing with these kinds of kids, because the mothers need to know what it feels like so they know they're not alone."
And you did one hell of a job. Yes, you did.
Thank you.
I love the book, and I've had so many people that are in our monthly drawing for a copy of Susan's book. Okay? This is mine. because I have a family member that I'm going to share it with afterwards to help them get through and to know that they're not alone. And thank you for being so vulnerable and raw and letting us, you know, get inside your hula hoop.
Thank you. Special. You've been wonderful sharing my hula hoop with.
Well, thank you. And our hula hoop shoots.
It does, on Extra Loud.
Absolutely. So tell my brains how to get in contact with you if they're looking to come on board as a Mary Kay consultant, if they are wanting to get a copy of the book or join your coaching program.
Okay. I have a coaching community on Facebook called Riverbank Community. So they can look me up on Facebook under Riverbank Community. They can join if they want. Amazon has my book, so they can go to Amazon and get Letting Go of Shame, A Mother's Journey Raising Addict Children. And if they want to check out my Mary Kay website, they're welcome to do that. That's marykay.com/sgoodson, G-O-O-D-S-O-N. And if they already have a Mary Kay consultant and they have questions, I would really encourage them to talk to their consultant, because we don't steal each other's consultants and we don't steal each other's clients. We support one another. That's we right. build each other up.
And there's so many of you brains. Do men sell Mary Kay?
Yeah.
So brains, you sitting there, you don't have a job. Okay, you're sitting there trying to figure out what to do. The restaurant's closed. You can't go back. Why not start a new career?
Absolutely.
Outside of yourself. Learn how to build a business. Learn how to do inventory management. Learn how to pay your bills on time. Learn how to build a team and be a part of a community. Okay? Be supportive. And Mary Kay, you know, I can't speak enough about them. And thank you so much again, Susan Goodson, for being here on The Edge. Brains, you know, people really pour out their emotions, and it makes me emotional here on my show. They feel comfortable. They take their shoes off and they wiggle their toes in the sand, okay? It's a great place. I want you to come and visit, tell your friends, come tell their story, promote their book, have a great conversation, have a cup of tea, win a prize. There's a whole lot of good stuff going on here on The Edge. So please subscribe right now to the YouTube channel, to the Blog Talk Radio. You can find me on Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. I'm all over the planet, okay? I'm here shooping for you. Thank you, sister. I love you.
We're going to have a
good fight, one tube of lipstick at a time.
Yes. That's what we'll do. We will beautify America, one face, one heart, and one soul at a time.
That's right. All right. I love you.
Okay. Love you too. Thank you.
Bye, brains.